welcome to the Glampy Tech Podcast. In today's episode, I spoke to Jason Devenish of Leisure Design Projects. Jason's a really interesting guy, and he explained his ideas on just how good your glamping site can be if you really think creatively. He argued against what he calls the cookie-cutter approach, suggesting that there are far greater opportunities in store for those who are bold in their glamping aspirations. Before we get on with today's episode, I'd like to remind you of Made of Bits, who are once again sponsoring us. They make bespoke timber frames cut with the CNC technology, perfect for manufacturers of glamping accommodation. Finally, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast through whichever app you're listening on. That way, episode 3 with Gareth Edwards from Naked Flame Eco Tubs will arrive straight in your feed. And with that, we're ready to go. Enjoy the podcast. I hope you find it useful. Hi, Jason. How are you doing?
Hello, Nick. Yeah, I'm well, thank you.
Good, good. So in the first episode of this podcast, when we spoke to Callum, we basically just got a bit of a run through of his backstory, how he got the idea for Glampy Tech and how he grew it to where it is today. So I'd like to do something similar for you. So could you just give us a bit of your backstory and your journey through to where Leisure Design is today?
Yeah, sure. My background in recent years has been in the visitor attractions industry. So anything from farm attractions to theme parks and zoos and other related holiday parks. And that's my background has been in the design and build of themed attractions, adventure play areas, adventure golf courses. And most of the projects that would have been involved in, I'd be coordinating the process from early brief to coordinating the entire design process prior to the project kind of going live, if you like. So I've been involved in a lot of complex design and build projects, mostly one-off bespoke projects, one from the other. And that's really been my focus, is creating projects that are designed for visitor experience and really create that amazing guest experience to encourage repeat business and offer various activities in addition to what the theme parks and zoos and farm attractions already had.
So when did you become aware of glamping as a thing and something that you wanted to get involved with?
I think I probably became aware of it just generally in the industry, just noticing that it's sort of taking off. But then we did see a lot of our visitor attraction projects, a lot of our visitor attraction clients, I should say, were starting to look at glamping or actually implement glamping on their site. So, for example, one of my clients, Creeley Great Adventure Parks, they put in a lot of lodge accommodation there. We worked with Chessington World of Adventures. They've put in safari tents and safari experience there. There's many other farm attractions and zoos that have done the same thing. And I think probably what inspired me the most was when we visited a conference at Port Lim Safari Park, where it was actually an industry event that was being held there. But the CEO at that time was Bob O'Connor, and he gave a speech, and that really inspired me because I could see that what they had done there was turned around a business which was failing and making a loss to being a complete success purely through accommodation and very unique accommodation. I mean, they have got a range of accommodation there, but I think what stood out for me was that they were pushing the boat out, they were raising the bar. And I think, you know, I'm speaking a little bit off the top of my head here, but I think they were achieving £600 a night with some of their treehouse accommodation, which was quite new in the industry, really. And they've created very unique experiences along with that accommodation, which attracted a lot of even international guests. So I think what Bob was doing there, and I know Bob very well now, and we worked together on some projects, was revolutionary, really, I think, in the UK anyway. And that's what inspired me to get into glamping. I think those early encounters, and also inspired me to get into glamping by raising the bar in the market rather than kind of this what I would call campsite mentality. We're trying to create experiences for guests, guest experience that you would, and using the methodology that you might say would apply to a visitor attraction and the kind of actions they would need to take to make sure it was a destination.
Yeah, we'll get into that later about how you're keen on avoiding the sort of cookie cutter approach, as you termed it.
Sure.
But so am I right in thinking that site has like tigers and stuff? I'm sure.
Yeah, they've got tigers, they've got lions, they've got giraffes, and you can actually purchase sort of one-off experiences where you can have a picnic in the middle of the safari, where you have the rangers kind of looking out for you while the wildlife graze around you. So yeah, they've done a great job there with creating very good experiences and add-on experiences as well to the accommodation offering, so you can hire a personal chef. They've got these kind of African experiences where they'll hire in a, you know, an actual native South African, I suppose, and he'll tell stories and play guitar tunes around the campfire and different things like that. So they've created some really cool experiences there alongside the accommodation.
One of my favourite things of yours that I've seen is something called Rufus Roost, which looks like a kind of fairy tale castle in the woods. I believe you made that through a branch of your company called Enchanted Creations. So I'd love for you to tell us more about that and how Rufus Roost is looking these days.
Yeah, so I suppose just to give you a quick background, you know, I Leisure Design Projects was originally incorporated as a sort of consultancy, I suppose, for leisure destinations or venues that saw the need to diversify. And obviously my experience in helping venues diversify, whether that be a golf venue diversifying into adventure golf and creating an extra revenue stream, or whether it be even a restaurant or a cafe implementing theming, you know, creating a themed attraction that gave them additional revenue and a unique identity, or an adventure play area within a farm park that just put them on the map a bit more. So this is what we do, is we create unique design-led experiences. And I think that was my background. I set up Leisure Design Projects while I was still working with a company called Greenspan, where they design and build a lot of these things I just mentioned, and set up Leisure Design Projects as a consultancy in this area, you know, because I can help people, you know, discover what it is they could do. I can help them develop a design for it and help them implement it as a project. And then I got involved with a brand called Enchanted Creations, where we started, you know, this is a company that traditionally had been involved in mostly domestic projects, so high-end residential projects, designing and building playhouses, treehouses, various bespoke garden buildings, that type of thing. And then they'd start getting involved in glamping as well and treehouse accommodation. And yeah, as you say, there was a project that was undertaken, which was for called Rufus Roost. It's north of York, and they've got a campsite as well, but they've got a standalone luxury 7-berth treehouse up on the hill, sort of overlooking with a great view and sort of overlooking the campsite, if you like. So they've got two very different offerings. They've got, you know, quite accessible, good quality campsite facilities. Within that, we built them some hobbit house pods, which weren't very high end. They weren't self-contained in terms of toilets and showers. They weren't necessarily insulated even, but they were basically an upgrade to somebody who may have booked a tent pitch. So they're nice looking units, definitely get a lot of attention, makes the destination stand out as a bit slightly more premium campsite, I suppose. But then very separately to that was this treehouse that if you go on right now and try and book, you won't get anything until probably February, March 2022. It's completely oversubscribed. So it's been a great success for them.
Yeah, I'll add a link to that in the description, because it is genuinely one of the best glamping offerings I've ever seen, to be honest. Completely different.
And I think what's interesting is if you look at glamping statistics, if you talk to any of the main booking agents, you'll see that group bookings actually make up a massive chunk now of glamping bookings. And there's not actually, you know, there's a shortage of glamping accommodation that's suitable for group bookings within the same structure, if you like. And being a 7-berth treehouse, it's also a 3-bed treehouse. So it's actually got 2 fully contained bedrooms and 1 that's sort of pretty much contained up in a mezzanine area with an additional 7th bed as well. So it works very well for sort of, you know, group bookings. And I think that's why they've found a unique selling point. And even though it stands alone in its own right with only having 1 unit, they've managed to find a way to become oversubscribed. Yeah.
So we'll get into the main sort of discussion now then. You were recently quoted in 2021 industry forecast in the section called specialization, where we basically advocated sort of targeting a very narrow target market for glamping stays. So it could include, you know, you can set up like a well-being retreat or a party retreat or anything sort of specifically targeted towards a small group of people. But in that, you basically said, and I know you're an advocate of the sort of experiential model. So you said glamping site operators should avoid the cookie cutter approach. So I'd like to ask you to elaborate a bit more on that, please.
Yeah, well, I think it's 100%. I'm an advocate of the experiential approach and raising the bar in glamping. That's what I've come into the market to do. And because I can see the magic that can be created at these destinations, I can see that actually this is quite a unique thing, you know, when you combine, you know, the kind of luxury of a hotel room, but set right in the middle of nature. And you look at what the consumers are wanting. They don't want the hassle of camping. They don't want the, but yet they want the luxury of hotels. And then you combine that with being really placed back into nature or getting close to Mother Nature, I think is a brilliant recipe for a brilliant offering there. And I think, you know, give credit to all the glamping sites that exist and where I might refer to the cookie cutter approach, you know, that's worked for people for years. And I think it will continue to work for, you know, within reason. I think when you look back, glamping's only really taken off in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. And it's just as the market becomes more and more saturated, like it does with any market, I firmly believe that those that differentiate, those that create an experience and raise their sights when it comes to not just the experience, but the price per night that they can achieve. And more importantly, the longevity in the marketplace. So it's all very well saying what's going to, you know, we can achieve this much per night in year one. What about year two? What about year three? How quickly can other operators copy what you're doing? Are there other operators in the area that are going to increase their offering? You know, what you want to do is try and separate yourself from those competitors, create something that's unique so you can become what I call oversubscribed, because it is unique. It stands out. Even somebody with another unique offering that might be nearby to you, it's still very different as an experience. So, you know, both can be oversubscribed, in my opinion, because they're unique. So I don't know if that covers what the question you asked.
Perfect summary. So in last week's episode, Callum and I did discuss saturation, and he mentioned, you know, the importance of USPs, but you believe it should go beyond that, more than just individual USPs. It should create a full-on, immersive, completely unique experience.
Yeah, I think where I kind of quite often get misunderstood is that every time I mention what I've just mentioned to you, people straight away think, oh, that's going to be expensive. It's bespoke, it's not for everybody. Yeah, and that's right. But I would say that it's not necessarily always expensive. You know, there's it's all about what you're going to get off the back of it. And, you know, people don't always have to be limited by their own personal savings and funds. You know, if they are passionate about creating something unique, and yes, it might come at a slightly more premium price point, but actually there's plenty of funding and asset finance and other methods of funding these things. And the more unique it is, and the more that you can prove that it's going to be a good business model, the more you're going to get funding for it. So I think it's all about how you view it. And I think what Callum refers to as USPs is right. It's a version of what I'm saying. And I think those with more conventional glamping units and experiences, it's not like they're not going to succeed. I think I've just found a passion in the market that I'm referring to.
Interesting. I mean, earlier you referred to the campsite mentality, and I know you're not trying to knock, you know, standard glamping sites, but do you believe that most glamping sites at the minute are really just campsites with a bit of a wooden shed on them, or is that being harsh?
Yeah, maybe it's a bit harsh to say it to that extent, but I think in effect, yes, you know, because what I think is being missed is that there's actually consumers are crying out for experiences, for memorable moments, Instagrammable moments. You know, consumers are cash rich and time poor, and they want more and more so as we see this experience economy that I call it we're in. You know, you can see, you know, where big high street shops are closing. It's only the stores that are providing experiences, or either if they're not providing experiences, they close down eventually, and other experiential offerings are replacing them. So I think it's just no doubt about it that that's the economy we're in. People are looking for experiences more and more so. They're looking for unique experiences. And I think what is possibly overlooked is that there's a market there that's potentially untapped. I think a lot of people have heard about glamping. They kind of still think of it as camping, some people. And I think it needs to be more unique. It needs to be that kind of retreat that you imagine when you go into a nice high-end hotel, but you're doing it in a completely different way that's actually more adventurous, more back to nature, but you're still prepared to pay exactly the same kind of rates you would pay for a top-notch hotel. And I think there's not enough in the market to satisfy that need. And
so you mentioned,
I think it's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the word Instagrammable there. It sort of leads on to a bit of a marketing discussion. Do you believe that I mean, I assume you believe in sort of like the power of Instagram then, because as I said last in last week's episode, glamping is inherently Instagrammable. It's something that people see their friends post about on social media and they want a bit of it, whether that's hot tubs or whatever. So do you think people who want to sort of provide an experiential experience, if that makes sense, should be sort of going all in on Instagram and social media marketing?
No, I 100% agree with that. I think that's the way things are going. I think when glamping operators are choosing their offering they're going to go with, I think at the very least, think about one of your structures being something that is highly Instagrammable and can get a lot of traction. Even if you can't afford to sort of roll out, you know, with 10 luxury, crazy, bespoke looking structures, it may be worth your while, you know, going for one very unique structure, and then the remainder might not be maybe more conventional, but it's actually what you're doing there is not only are you creating a great marketing opportunity, it might be the reason people come to know you because you have got so much traction on social media or whatever. It might be the thing that can be talked about in news articles. You know, when you've got five conventional glamping pods, you haven't got much to talk about. Whereas if you've got one unique one that's getting a lot of traction in the media, you can talk about that. You throw it all over, you know, from a PR perspective. And that might be the reason people actually come to your site. And that might actually increase the price of your other pods because you're becoming this known for a more premium experience. So I think, yes, I think it's important to, Instagram's very important. I think it's very hard to achieve that when you've got a very similar looking, you know, wigwam style. I call them pigsties as well sometimes. But that type of arch camping pod that everybody's seen everywhere, and it's kind of becoming a bit old hat.
So it's quite interesting how you're basically suggesting that if we're talking about value for money, it might actually make more sense long term to invest big in one unit rather than spread the cost across like five, because A, you know, you can get a higher rate for it, and B, for a marketing budget, you can just focus on that rather than just sort of having five standard things that won't really gain much of attraction online or in the media.
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, we would look at every project on its own basis. And, you know, as you would when you guys at Glampatech do your feasibility studies, we'd do the same. We'd look at the site, we'd look at the competitor analysis, we'd look at the planning feasibility. So a lot of what you do will be guided by that. But I just think as you make those informed decisions, just creating something that's more premium not only gives you what we just talked about, that kind of hook from a marketing perspective, but it does kind of start putting your accommodation into different price points that appeals to more of an audience. And sometimes when people come on and they might come on and look at your lower cost option, but then they're kind of tempted by the higher cost option. They may come and visit your lower cost option, and then they kind of get to know the site. It might be a beautiful location. They may have had a lovely time, but then they know that they can come back for your more premium accommodation or your treehouse experience. So that also encourages repeat business.
So I know you've got a business to run, and I don't want you to give away too many trade secrets, but could you give the audience just a couple of ideas of sort of if they're looking to create a really experiential, I keep saying experiential experience, you know, creating a real experience.
Experiential destination. Yeah.
Experiential destination. Could you throw them maybe just some little ideas about what they might be looking for if they want to attract, you know, a decent nightly rate and a decent number of customers?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to do is which we do in our concept design workshops and processes. You know, once we've looked at the feasibility of glamping on at a destination, not only do we undertake that feasibility with the mind that we're trying to create something special and unique, not necessarily overpriced, not over budget. Not, you know, it's just we're just coming at it from that angle. When we do our competitor analysis, you know, we won't be just saying, oh, XYZ down the road is achieving this price tonight, so you could do the same. What we're saying is he's doing this, and this one over here is doing that. So you may consider positioning yourself here. But then as soon as we would finish that feasibility, what tends to happen is people tend to rush into the planning process. And I'm not against anybody who wants to keep momentum going. I think that's important. But I would just pause a little bit and go through a concept design phase, however, you know, simple it may be, but where we try and help our clients create an identity for themselves. So we look at the culture, we look at the heritage, we look at what the area is famous for, we look at what even their personal dreams. They might have some lovely fairy tale story they want to tell about their magical woodland that's kind of, fabricated. It's not necessarily to do with the culture or the heritage of the place. But what I would be looking for is trying to find a hook that gives them an identity. And I think that's my first piece of advice, is at the very least, you know, try and arrive at something early on that you can then, all your stakeholders throughout the process from there on, your architects, your planners, your manufacturers, your, you know, even the guys that do the landscaping and the infrastructure, everybody's just tied into the vision. And I think that also helps you get funding. It helps you through your planning process, because it looks like you've actually thought about this business and the branding and the, you know, the identity that you're trying to create, and everybody can sort of believe in that. So I think that would be my first piece of advice. And then I think secondly, I would just say, just be very careful about doing what everybody else is doing. You know, think about how you can be more unique. That doesn't have to be spending lots of money. It might be putting in six decent structures that I would say are a bit more thought through, maybe got some additional features, maybe just look a little bit different, maybe even look different one from the other, so that people can come back and stay in the other unit with the different features, rather than going down maybe the route of 10 very conventional units. Think about that, and think about how you can achieve your price point, because then at least you can add on to that once you've kind of proved that model.
So recently you wrote a blog post, you sort of interviewed the owner of a country hotel, and you discussed the changing nature of luxury and how the landscape is changing and how traditional options like hotels are incorporating glamping into their offerings, and also how they're changing their own definitions of luxury from something where, you know, five-star experience previously used to be nice beds, nice furniture, and all that sort of stuff. But now it's changing to something experiential, but also being comfortable, but also being something new, and being able to associate traditional luxury with being close to nature as well. So I'd just like you to sort of maybe expand on that idea and that blog post.
Yeah, well, I guess we've been looking at that market, 4 or 5 star hotels, country hotels, and like-minded country estates and other venues. I mean, there's some lovely golf venues that I think could benefit from this. But I think as we've launched a new glamping pod into the market, which is, you might say, it's a premium product. So I think we're looking at markets that kind of can see the benefit of that, and markets to showcase that it actually works. So we're looking at the country hotel market, as I say. And yes, I interviewed Fiona Hill of Hampton Manor, which is based in the Midlands, luxury boutique hotel with a Michelin star restaurant. It's very interesting what they're doing there. You know, they are creating unique foodie experience for their guests. It's almost like a foodie staycation, if you know what I mean. So you can meet the chef, you can understand where the food came from, and you know, it's all very experiential around the foodie, sitting around the table experience. But so they're a great destination. I think they're doing well in sort of being oversubscribed and very specific experience that they are aiming at. And I know they were thinking about glamping, putting cabins in, putting glamping habitats into their estate. So yeah, I invited her to interview her, and she came up with some really good insights. I think it was quite reassuring. You look at the existing country hotels that have done this well, you know, I think they realize that they can actually achieve the same, if not more, as a price per night for a unique experience, which might be in a cabin in the kitchen garden or down by the lake or in the woodlands somewhere on the estate. That's actually just a unique experience. Like you say, it's back to nature. It's something they can't get in the middle of a hotel building. They, you know, I think country hotels, the benefits to them are, there's quite a few. I think, you know, number one, they can take advantage of glamping as a market, which is growing as a whole. So they've got land, glamping's booming. They're struggling to fill their hotel, perhaps in the light of the pandemic. You know, glamping's going to work on your site, you know, do it. And they've got facilities such as restaurants, possibly a spa, possibly other courses or experiences that they offer, that they could bring more footfall to those existing services they offer, which might have been undersubscribed up until now. By adding additional accommodation, they're adding extra beds. I know for a fact that, you know, there's hotels that have to turn down contracts for, you know, events or weddings, or because they just can't facilitate the number of beds that are required. So again, that's another opportunity. Again, it's another reason that if you're going to do glamping, do it right, because that's the kind of accommodation people are looking for, something on a par with the hotel bedrooms. And then I think, you know, that's just a few of the reasons, but I think there's a lot of benefits for them because they've kind of already used to that accommodation model. It's just a bolt-on, if you like. It brings more footfall. They're taking advantage of a growing industry, and they are the right mindset to charge a decent amount per night and offer a good luxury experience. So that's why we're looking at that market at the moment.
And presumably they've already got land as well, so they don't have to bother with buying it or anything like that.
Sure.
And then to wrap things up, this is something that we'd like to make a regular feature of the podcast. We're going to ask each guest if they could give one tip to anyone who runs a glamping site or is thinking of setting one up, what would that be?
I think my tip to them would be at the feasibility and concept design stage before you launch into it. You know, just think bigger. Think about how you can create an experience. You know, there's consumers out there that are pining for a premium experience, city dwellers possibly and beyond, looking for a premium experience. And I think if you've got beautiful land, try and see how much you can create a beautiful experience rather than by default going down the road of a conventional solution that you might have seen applied in many instances around the country. So think about how you can create your own unique identity and create longevity in your business model for the years to come.
And that's a wrap. I hope you found Jason's comments as interesting and as thought-provoking as I did. I really feel like there were some nuggets in there for anyone who wants to try something a little different with their glamping dream. Thanks again to our sponsors, Made of Bits, who are your go-to for glamping pod frames. And don't forget to subscribe so you're ready for next week's episode with Gareth Edwards of Naked Flame, manufacturers of hot tubs. I look forward to seeing you then.